It's 8:10 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. Well, in the studio with me, Cheryl Fox, Executive Director of the Summit Land Conservancy. Good morning.
Good morning.
First, an update on the Oscarthorpe Farm. As we reported last week, you've got some breathing room now because you were able to come up with a $2.5 million down payment, but that's only a down payment.
That's right. It's a refundable advanced payment. That's kind of how we're talking about it at this point, so that if we're not able to find the last $3 million, we can get the money back and go our separate ways. We do hope that that isn't what happens, and the family hopes that that isn't what happens. And I think that their commitment to this is well demonstrated by the fact that they're willing to take out a loan and incur interest payments in order to keep the possibility of saving the farm as a farm alive. So we are looking at another $3 million and getting started on that.
So you received, with that $2.5 million, some 400 donations, individual donors.
Over 400 individual donors. So we certainly never anticipated, the Summit Land Conservancy never anticipated having to raise, you know, that much money from individuals, and hadn't ever raised that much money from individuals before. So we, you know, kind of put it out there. There were neighborhood groups who were hugely supportive, individuals who were hugely supportive. And we raised, a $2.5 million from about 400 individuals. So there's no grants. There's no corporate contributions in that. That's all donations from individuals, most of them Summit County residents.
Yeah. And I was going to ask, I mean, so have you tapped everybody out? I mean, where else do you go?
I hope not, because we still have a heavy lift. It was something that we, again, the organization took a pretty hard look at our February board meeting and said, wow, you know, what are we going to do here? And we think that there are probably some people who haven't heard yet about the opportunity to save the farm, and also some people who might still be interested in helping us out. And, you know, we're looking at all sorts of options. Now we have a little breathing room as well and, you know, can write some grants and things like that. I know a lot of times people think that, you know, you write a grant and woohoo, you get a lot of money, and sometimes you do. But, you know, donations from individuals are really far more effective.
And with charitable donations now no longer a tax write-off, does that become even more challenging?
Well, they're not no longer a tax write-off. It depends on sort of your income bracket and where you are. So, and frankly, I think that there are situations where people donate and the tax write-off helps. But in my experience, the reason that people give is not so much the tax write-off. It's because they want to save the farm or save the open space, keep the radio on the air, support, you know, abused families, or keep music and interesting things coming to the community. So I think people donate because that's a cause that's important to them. But we'll see.
Yeah. So where else do you go?
Well, if you haven't been asked yet to support the Oscarthorpe campaign, you probably will be. I think that's part of it. I, you know, we're doing a lot of an analysis right now of where the donations have come from so that we can find, you know, opportunities where, again, like I said, people maybe haven't heard about it and haven't learned about it. And, you know, we're not ruling anything out. There may be, well, it's unlikely that there would ever be state funding for something like this. But, you know, maybe the county will decide that there's a way that we can go forward, and we'll see.
So are there any other opportunities for public funding then, other than the county? I mean, you mentioned grants, but is that a long shot? Or,
you know, grants, again, grants for land conservation in the state of Utah run, I mean, you can get some that are fairly substantial, but there are very few organizations that actually support land conservation like this in a way that's, you know, more than $100,000. And we're looking at $3 million. So, I mean, $100,000 is significant. It certainly is significant. But there are a handful of organizations that might give at that level. So we'll certainly ask them. But I think that we really are going to still have to rely on the community.
And the counties, at one point, we're talking about giving you how much?
$4 million.
So,
well,
that
that's
would...
what we asked for. Mm-hmm. So, and they did make an offer at $4 million. Yeah.
All right. So, I mean, with that, you'd be done.
We'd be done.
Yeah.
But that was not an acceptable transaction for the family.
Right. So, this is all happening because of some bequests that were made in a will. Did the alma mater get all of its money they're taking care of here?
They will be taken care of, yep. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. So then that's why we have a little more time. So, you know, the federal government, as we've said a number of times, doesn't move very quickly on its funding. So this gives us time to get that process going and started and running and raise that last $3 million. So we're really grateful for the family for being willing to do that.
Okay. Let's see. Also coming up, you've got your moonshine adventure. What's this?
That's right. So on the nights of the full moons, the Summit Land Conservancy, in partnership with Mountain Trails Foundation, have these fun little moonlight ski adventures. So you meet at 7 p.m. at the parking lot at the bottom of the first time lift. Bring your touring skis and your skins, warm coats, and a light, and they climb up, and then they ski back down. So the next one of those, the last one probably of the season, is on March 30th, which will be a blue moon. And people, there's no cost. You can just show up 7 p.m. on March 30th at the bottom of the first time lift. And then we have had a number of calls in the office in the last day or two about our summer camps. And summer camp registration will open online on March 28th. And we call them our outdoor adventure camps. We take the kids for a week, starting from at 9 a.m. till about 4 p.m. We go outside. They have a variety of different days outdoors. They hike, they bike, they go river rafting. And every day also includes some opportunities for free play outdoors, because there's so many studies that show that that is really what kids need in order to, you know, lower their stress levels and their ADD, and encourage them to be people who care about the environment in the future.
Okay. People go online for more information.
WeSaveLand.org, and then look under the Get Involved tab.
Okay. Hey, Cheryl, thanks.
Thank you.
Cheryl Fox is the Executive Director of the Summit Land Conservancy. Well, the Summit County Council meets tomorrow in work session starting at 3:45 at the County Courthouse in Colville. In the studio to preview that agenda, I have County Manager Tom Fisher. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
Let's start with the legislative update. The county supporting a bill asking for the state to provide money for indigent defense attorneys?
Yes. Counties across Utah provide almost 100% of the funding for indigent defense. And that's not exactly what the intent of statute is regarding indigent defense. So we're all kind of banding together, including UAC, to try and see if we can remedy some of that situation and provide a little bit more relief for the counties in that regard.
Yeah, how much do we get?
I don't know the exact number that we get, but we're providing almost 100%. But interestingly enough, Summit County is one of the models in how we do provide that, and it's run through Kent Jones's office, and so he manages that contract, and he's done some innovative things over the last few years to control some of the spending on that, but still provide good indigent defense for the county.
Our Senator Kevin Van Tassel has a bill providing that oil and gas disputes with counties are decided by the State Division of Oil and Gas. County Council Member Glenn Wright apparently has gotten the Duchesne and Uinta County Commissioners to agree to an amendment. What's that about?
So we're more concerned. In Duchesne and Uinta counties are more concerned with production. We're more concerned with transmission and pipelines. We've seen that issue come up in the past. We'd like to see the bill amended to take out the transmission part of that. And it seems like those two counties or their commissions would be amenable to that. We just need to get back with Senator Van Tassel and see if he's willing to make that change. And he's indicated that he would in concept.
Okay. And how would that have impacted us? I mean,
it takes some local control away from regulating those items. And as we've seen in the past, our council is very interested in that, especially as it relates to our watersheds.
All right. And that kind of goes back to that Tesoro pipeline that was proposed. They took it off the planning stages, at least for now. It could come back.
It always could come back, and those issues come up every once in a while.
All right. What's happening with the ban on bans bill, as far as you know?
Well, I haven't heard anything specific. Unfortunately, I was in personnel interviews all day yesterday, but it's not encouraging. I've heard some there might be a carve out for Park City, as they've already enacted something, but I don't know the update on that. Well, I'm sure we'll hear more today.
All right, let's talk just a little bit about that. You are in the search for a new deputy manager. That's what was happening yesterday. Are we to a handful of finalists?
So I had two panels of interviewers yesterday. They interviewed six people. I was on one of those panels. We will be narrowing this week. We had six excellent candidates, and it's going to be a tough choice.
When do you expect to have that named?
I expect by next week. I still got one candidate that I'd like to interview out there who is not available this week. But other than that, I think we'll be able to make an announcement next week.
Okay. Also in the legislative update, the county opposes a bill mandating that counties that lose a civil suit would have to pay the cost of the attorneys of the other side. Isn't that how things are done?
Well, it's not the way it's done right now. And obviously, if that were the case, we probably wouldn't be fighting it. But, you know, the Attorneys Association is unanimous in this and has been fighting it. And they've also geared up UAC to fight it. So we'd rather not have that change made.
Okay. Let's see. There's also an agreement for the North Summit Recreation District to acquire land from the city of Colville. For parks?
Yes. North Summit Recreation District already owns an adjacent parcel to the piece of land that's being talked about with Colville. And it was just, we've been working on this for quite a while with the North Summit Rec District in Colville, and it was just kind of dotting some I's and crossing some T's with language to get to this final agreement and get it on the agenda this week.
Okay, so no issues with the transaction?
There's no issues.
All right. Also, a resolution on the opioid crisis and supporting legal action. So does the county envision taking some individual legal action? Are we acting with a group here?
I believe we'll be acting with a group. Of course, County Attorney Margaret Olson would be a lot better to answer detailed questions about this. But yes, I think our council is very concerned about this crisis and wants, with the county attorney and her leadership, would like to be part of this as it becomes a national issue.
Right. We're seeing different states do this.
Absolutely. So. Different states and a lot of local governments. I mean, counties are out in front of this across the nation, really through our National Association of Counties, who have been organizing this over the last year as well. So Summit County wants to be part of that. And we recognize the crisis, and we want to be part of this solution.
So are we talking about just suing the drug manufacturers, or are we talking about doctors who prescribe?
Well, that's interesting. I think mostly we're talking about manufacturers in this resolution. We'll see how that evolves this will become a large lawsuit. So with many players involved, so we'll see how that evolves.
Let's see. There's an administrative appeal procedure. This concerns appeals from decisions from the Planning Commission, you, the Development Director. Any substantive changes there?
Well, what's happening is that we've kind of had an informal process about how these get teed up on our agenda, how we receive documents, how we receive testimony. Since we have two big ones right now, we anticipate more in the future as some land use actions come through the planning commissions up to the council. We just want to have a set procedure in place so that these can happen in a standard way and that appellants have information in front of them when they apply for that appeal, exactly how that's going to be processed.
So what are we talking about? What are the changes?
There's no changes, really. It's just solidifying the procedure and putting some time frames and dates around it and requirements for submissions mostly. We've kind of gotten into a habit of appellants bringing their materials to the hearing, which means the public doesn't see them, the council doesn't get to view those well enough in advance to make good deliberation.
Can you tell us where we are with regard to the Woodward and Colby School appeals?
So the latest is that the Colby School appeal will be heard on the 14th of March, and then I believe we've settled on the 28th of March for the Woodward appeal.
Okay. Let's see, and also a resolution for an interlocal agreement with Salt Lake County. Again, the Olympic Legacy Foundation seeking this conduit financing from Summit County for improvements at both the Olympic Park and the Kearns Speed Skating Oval. So in order to cover the foundation's work in Kearns, you need to have an agreement with Salt Lake County?
That is correct. So the bonds are issued in Summit County. There has to be, in order for those to be expended in another county, they have to be an interlocal agreement in order to make that work. That satisfies the bond requirements as they issue those bonds. It's less of a state law issue, more of a bond issuance issue.
So it's an interlocal agreement as opposed to the financing agreement?
That's correct. Yeah. And then so those the interlocal agreement and one of the resolutions will be adopted this week by the council. Because of noticing requirements, there'll be another resolution that will come up next week in order to finalize that process and allow them to get into their into their bond sale.
Okay, and then just to be very clear, Summit County residents don't pay any of that $19.5 million.
Absolutely. There is no obligation to the county government or its residents to support that bond financially.
And you're satisfied that the Olympic Legacy Foundation is going to be able to come up with almost $20
million? Yeah, so Colin Hilton was in last week to talk to the council about how that financing structure was going to work and what was behind the support for all of that bond, and the council was satisfied with that, I believe.
All right. Let's see. Also, a separate bond issuance of up to $22 million, and this is for the transportation projects. It'll get started this summer?
That's correct. In fact, I've got a meeting today at 11 o'clock down in Salt Lake to take one of the steps and hear some of the information regarding those bonds with bond council. So, yes, so this is part of the process as well. We have to have a public hearing around this bond issuance, and this is what will happen tomorrow.
So the deal is that we're collecting about $8 million a year from the two different forms of sales tax revenues. So
that's correct.
We're going to go ahead and bond for $22 million, which you could collect in less than 4 years.
Yeah. So if we dedicated all of those funds to that. So as we've explained before, we're doing some projects in a kind of pay-as-you-go model. With some of that revenue, and then we're going to bond against the rest. And that's kind of a conservative approach because, you know, let's say there was a downturn in the economy and it was difficult or prices dramatically raised on projects and we had to go forward with doing those bond projects. We could slow down those pay-as-you-go projects in order to make up for that difference. So that's how we're approaching it.
So we'll bond all 422 at once then?
That's correct. And then those projects are programmed over a 3-year period to get completed.
Okay. And we're talking about projects like the Jeremy Ranch Interchange with new roundabouts?
That's correct. It also includes the purchase of the park, the completing the purchase of the park and ride out in Camas. As well as some of the remote parking projects that we've talked about and improvements to Kilby Road.
All right. We're also talking about doing something for the Klein Dolly parcel. This is also near Jeremy. What's being proposed?
We purchased that property with a couple of ideas in mind, one of them being remote parking, the other being some mix of affordable housing. So we are going to be going into a master planning process this summer under contract with a consultant to get into what it is we will do with that property and then what will be supported by the public to do with that property. And at that point, we'll be able to definitively say what we're going to go forward with.
The bond could not pay for the affordable housing, only the parking?
That's correct.
All right. And then also the connection from Lower Silver Creek to Bittner Road. You heard public comment about this last week. When will the council decide on which road option to move?
Well, on? I think we'd like to bring it back sooner rather than later. We kind of got caught up into the problem. You know, I think the last time we really talked about this seriously was about a year and a half to 2 years ago, before a lot of those homes in Woodside went in Lower Silver Creek. So, you know, naturally, so they've not heard about it as much as most of the residents in Silver Creek. I think we need to do a little bit more public work in that in order to have people understand what the options are, why they are the options, why we have to do the project in the first place. And then we can bring it back to the council for their preference on a right-of-way.
All right. Essentially, it's just a frontage road, though, right?
It is. And you know, some of that right-of-way already exists, especially by the Woodside homes. That that right-of-way was preserved well before that project ever went forward. One of the reasons that it's come forward right now is that there's some commercial development being proposed on the east side of the Woodside Homes in Lower Silver Creek. We expect that they will come forward in the planning process sometime in the near future. And we want to make sure that we have a preferred option in place. If that frontage road is the preferred option, that we have it in a plan and ready for the Planning Commission to preserve that right-of-way as projects go through the process.
Okay. I wanted to ask you also, just off the agenda, what's happening with the Central Wasatch Commission? I have not heard from about this for
a while. So they have continued to meet. They've had two meetings this year already. The Summit County's application for membership on that is still being considered. They're kind of working out. There's still a lot of bugs going through in their process. So they're working through that very deliberately and slowly so that they don't miss anything as they go through their processes. I think our application will be formally considered at their next meeting. As they solidify their process. I think at their last meeting, they actually passed a budget. So,
And could the commission then be affected by, there's some legislation from Mike Knoll?
I think the activities of the commission could be affected by some of that legislation. I'm not sure our membership or anything related to that would be.
Okay. Let's see. What are the plans for the council retreat?
Okay, council retreat. We've identified two areas that we really need to work on with the council this year. One of them is as we've come through a lot of these planning activities in the last year, whether they deal with the canyons, whether they deal with projects that are being appealed or the East Side Code, we and looking forward even out to that 2030 year. With a possible Winter Olympics coming, we really want to hear from the council this year some detailed ideas about what is it that they want the county to look like, act like, feel like in that out year. So we're really kind of going back to the top of our strategic plan and looking at that vision statement to see if there's any reasons that we need to change that or revise it. And then as well, following up on the joint meeting that we had with the two planning commissions about our housing assessment, we'd like to get a little bit more, we'd like to flesh out what we heard at that meeting from the different planning commissions and from the council, and then get a little bit more detailed direction from the council where to take our housing planning for the year.
So this is happening March 12th. Is the public prohibited from attending?
Not prohibited at all. It'll be a notice public meeting. They can certainly come if they'd like to. It is the opportunity also for the council to discuss as a group some items that they don't normally dig into.
Yeah, there's also a request, though, for the media just to kind of give you some.
And we do that every year. We talk to the media each year about whether they'd like to attend or not. We like to give the council this opportunity to discuss freely some of these big direction topics with staff. Certainly we'll make the council available around that, but if the press or the public want to show up, they're perfectly welcome.
Okay, where's that going to be?
It's going to be, I've forgotten the exact name, but it's a conference center in up Chalk Creek Road, east of Colville.
Okay. Anything else you wanted to mention?
That's all I've got.
All right, Tom, thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you.
Well, the Park City Hospital is presenting a free workshop on Thursday called Conquer Your Chromosomes with Sarah Gottfried. Moderating the discussion is fitness expert and a member of the hospital board of directors, Kathy Smith. She joins me now on the phone. Good morning, Kathy.
Hey, good morning.
So tell us a little bit about yourself. I mean, people may remember some of the, back in the day, the VHS tapes that you used to do.
Yeah, talk about back in the day. Yeah, I have been in the fitness industry for probably about 40 years. I started, actually, my first product came out in 1979, probably the what you're talking about, were the VHS, were in the 80s, where we had the high-impact aerobics, the low-impact aerobics, step aerobics, and that took me into writing books and having a TV show and really just being out there trying to promote health and wellness throughout the country.
So Park City is now a part-time home for you?
You know what? It's my full-time home. I travel a lot, but it's full-time. So I'm on the road with work, with family, with other obligations. But when I'm not on the road, I'm in Park City, Utah. I love it here.
Okay. Well, tell us a little bit about Sarah Gottfried and about her background.
So Sarah is an MD, Harvard-educated doctor, OBGYN, who probably about 20 years ago started noticing in her practice that women were coming in having a lot of complaints about energy level, belly fat, mental focus, not being able to sleep, and some of these common complaints that we get as we age. And she started working with her practice with the research in trying to design a program or a protocol that will help people deal with some of these issues with lifestyle, with changing in some eating habits, in some fitness habits, in some sleep habits, and how to start shifting what she calls your health span. So, you know, we all think about how long we want to live, but the average life expectancy in this country is 79 years, but the average health span in the country is 69 years. And health span is that period of time when you're feeling vital and alive and energetic and, you know, you can get out and do things. And her whole goal was to help extend that lifespan. So that's why this idea of conquering your chromosomes, that we think that genetically we've been given that we might get diabetes or we might get Alzheimer's or we might get this or that. And yet what science is proving is that 90% of what happens to your body is determined by how you treat your body, what you're doing to support good health.
Okay, so you guys will be talking about that and then kind of a Q&A after that?
Yeah, so it's going to be a real lively discussion. She's going to be doing her presentation on conquering your chromosomes, and then we will have a Q&A, so bring your questions on any topics, whether it is about, you know, I'm starting to get belly fat and I'm still working out, I'm exercising, I'm eating right, but there's a shift in my body, whether it's sleep issues or whether it is just energy levels or even anxiety and depression, things like that. So bring your questions. We're going to have a discussion. We are going to really turn it over to the group, the audience, at one point to say, what do you want to learn from Sarah?
Great. Okay, again, this is happening this Thursday, 6 to 7:30 p.m. at the Blair Education Center. It's free and open to the public. Do people need to respond or RSVP or anything?
You know what? They can just show up.
Okay. Kathy, anything else you wanted to mention?
No, just so much fun being on the show. And I have known Sarah forever, and she is one of the people that I look to for answers when it comes to lifestyle questions, and, you know, just don't miss the opportunity.
Great. All right. Hey, thanks, Kathy. KPCW News Time now, 8:44. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. Well, People's Health Clinic is collaborating with the Park City Film Series and the Moran Eye Center to screen the documentary Notes on Blindness. That's happening this Thursday as well at the Jim Sani Auditorium in the studio. Tell us more about that. I have from People's Health Clinic, Beth Armstrong. I have eye doctor with the Moran Eye Center, Dr. Barbara Orozco, and along with Katie Wang from the film series. Good morning, ladies.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning,
Leslie.
So let's start maybe with you, Beth. We've got some free eye screenings as part of this, and this is happening when and where?
This is going to take place on Thursday evening at the Jim Sante Auditorium. And it's going to start, we're going to go at 5 o'clock. And we'll just be doing eye screenings for anyone, absolutely free, as well as audiology screenings at the same time. So we'll have several tables set up, in the
community room.
Yeah, the community room across from the theater. And if you do end up having some issues, then we'll let you know about those, and then you'll be referred to someone that can then take care of you further. Not that night, but you obviously will make points for you later on.
Okay. Barbara, what are you actually screening for when you're looking at these eyes?
So these are very cursory screenings, and it's really just for vision. So we can do vision distance and near for children and adults. We can also do an eye pressure with a non-contact tonometer. So that's a basic good screening for glaucoma. And then just really looking at the front of the eye with, you know, really just a pen light. So again, it's really a cursory screening. But I think the emphasis is around education. And we will have an education station there from 5 to 7 before the movie, where it'll be staffed by Moran ophthalmologists as well as support, with a lot of brochures, photos of the eye, models of the eye, and all sort of just information, education.
Yeah, and as anybody who's worn glasses knows, they really didn't really know they needed them until, you know, maybe a parent noticed or a teacher noticed that, you know, they weren't learning or they were squinting or, you know, they couldn't read the chalkboard and then get glasses. And it's like, oh, my gosh, there's leaves on the tree.
Yes, exactly.
That's always there. And then the test that you do for glaucoma is like when you shoot the air in the eye?
Yes. We could do it two ways. You can do it actually contacting the eye with eye drops that numb the eye, or you can do more of a puff. And for this, we're hoping just to do the puff. This way patients don't need any eye drops.
Puff of air. Yeah, it's not like you're blowing. Okay, and then following with that, then we're going to screen the film again, Notes on Blindness. This is a documentary, Katie?
Yes, so this is a documentary that premiered at the Sundance Film Festival in 2017, and it is just, it's amazing. It's this very immersive experience. It follows the story of John Hull, who's a theologian, and it's really based on his audio diaries, which actually are replayed throughout the film. And it's about his process of going blind and really coming to terms with that. And, you know, he doesn't shy away from the sorrow that entails and the depression, certainly, that he faced, but then also the unexpected joy, I mean, what he discovered. I think most of us as sighted people, you know, we're kind of fearful of going blind, that it's going to be this, you know, what are we going to lose? It's going to be absolute darkness. But then you think of, like, you know, a rainstorm, right? If you close your eyes and just the intensity of that and just, you know, how all your other senses are heightened if you lose one of them, and that there is some joy in the discovery of that. And so he really, as a theologian, you know, kind of has this very philosophical, you know, spiritual take on what's happening to him. And it's just incredible how they've used his audio diaries and then have actors basically kind of lip syncing to it in a very engaging way. But, and they've created this whole soundscape so that it's made actually for a blind audience as well as a sighted audience. So we invite our members of our community who are low vision, who are blind, to come join us for this experience, because it really is meant to be for all members of our community. And it's just, as I said, this immersive experience. It's unbelievable just what they've been able to do. And if it's a film you didn't get to catch at Sundance, please come join us for that at 7 o'clock.
So the screenings start, the audio and vision screenings start at 5. The film starts when?
Film starts at 7.
Okay.
Yep. Free screening. Yep. It's about an hour and a half. And as I said, you know, it's meant for, you know, a dual audience. You know, one thing that we've worked very hard on with the Sundance Institute and with some funds received from the Dumke Foundation and the restaurant tax is to upgrade the ADA capabilities of our theater. So we now have closed captioning available as well as audio description. But with this film, because of the way that they've designed it, it's something that you don't need special devices to participate in. It's really accessible to everyone, which is, you know, it's unique and something that we're really excited to bring to our community.
All right. And then, Beth, do people need to make an appointment or they just need to show up?
We would appreciate if you would make an appointment to for the screening. You don't have to. We're going to have a lot of help there the night of. We'll be able to handle it. But if you want to make sure that you have a specific time, then give us a call at the clinic, 435-333-1850. And we'll make a reservation for you and hold the spot. Otherwise, just show up. And then following the film, we have a panel discussion.
And that actually is going to be very enlightening, too. So there's several ophthalmologists that now come up to the Moran, and these are all very accomplished individuals. We also have Colleen Schubach. We're going to have one of our local Park Cityites, Judy Summer, on the panel as well, the director of the People's Health Clinic. I'll be moderating it. And we hope to get some good discussions around what it means to be visually impaired, the services that are available, and really how you prevent vision impairment and loss of vision early on.
Sunglasses?
Sunglasses are great. I tell all my patients, wear sunglasses, yes.
And regular eye exams. With someone that's worn glasses my whole life, it's something we've talked a lot about. It's like you think about going to the dentist and the doctor, but eye exams are not something that people kind of have on their annual schedule, but really it should be. Your eyes are important.
That is very true. You really should have a complete dilated eye exam around the age of 40. And so often those of us who do not wear glasses regularly don't think to have a dilated eye exam. But there's a lot you can learn from the patient and you can see in the retina. And diseases can pop up, so it's important.
Yeah. So what does that do when you dilate the pupil?
So you actually make the pupils large, so you can actually look at the entire retina, the peripheral retina as well, and you can pick up holes, tears, vascular diseases. It goes on. The list goes on.
Oh, you can see that in your pupil? Vascular disease?
In the retina, yes.
Interesting.
Huh. The window to the soul.
The window to the soul. The window to the, yes.
I would also like to mention that if you're one of People's Health Clinic's patients, that we do have a clinic next week.
Yes.
At the clinic, an eye clinic will be going on. So if you would like a more extensive eye exam and are one of our clinic patients, if you're uninsured and live in Sumner, Wasatch County, just call the clinic and make an appointment for next week's eye clinic.
Okay. Anything else you want to mention?
I just want to thank the Marin Eye Center for sponsoring the film and for
our
partners,
thank
of course, the People's Health Clinic.
Yes, so we want to thank Katie. It's been fun.
I want to also just because I want to say good luck to Amber Conley.
Okay.
Yes.
Beth and Barbara and Katie, thanks for your time this morning.